Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The hand-illustrated cartoon-style front cover of the new book Matt's St. Louis Food Story is something like a Where's Waldo spread, except for the fact that there's more than a dozen Matts scattered throughout instead of just one. And each bearded, bespectacled, flat-capped figure is doing what the book's author, STL native Matt Sorrell, has done for more than 20 years, eating and drinking in St. Louis and writing about it. Today, we'll sink our teeth into bars, restaurants, shops, and purveyors in this volume, and do so with Matt Sorrell himself. Matt, welcome back to St. Louis on the Air.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So when I say welcome back, it's because you are no stranger to our show.
Right.
And I believe the last time you were on, you were speaking with us about, I guess what we'd call like a quintessentially St. Louis sandwich, the St. Paul sandwich.
Yeah.
And longtime listeners, I think, will recall that you were a fairly frequent guest on the show when you were a staff writer for Sauce.
Right.
So you've been writing about food for a long time.
Right.
Why did you decide to write a book? Was there a tipping point?
No, actually, just like quick backstory. So about 13 years ago or so, a friend of mine and I co-wrote a book called Shop Like a Chef. Clara Moore, she's a local chef. She's actually not in town anymore. She's on the East Coast. But she was the executive chef for Local Harvest. She had started this book about shopping at grocery stores, you know, and whatnot, and asked me to come in and help her out with it. So when that book was about 10 years old and out of print, I thought, you know, let's shop around. Maybe we can get like a second volume. And nobody was really terribly interested at the time, but I had talked to Reedy Press, and they said that they didn't have room for that on their roster, but that maybe we could do some work in the future. And then fast forward about a year later, they called me and said, hey, we'd like you to do some writing for us. And it kind of went from there.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean that you had like a notebook or maybe a document, a Google Doc, that had the names of places that you wanted to include?
No, not really. I mean, I had it kind of in my head. And, you know, I had a certain amount of favorites. And then once I started really thinking about it and putting it, you know, kind of codifying it and putting it in a document, that's where a lot of it started happening. Like, I'm like, oh, I forgot about this place and I forgot about this place, and kind of went from there.
Mm-hmm. So you've had a lot of great source material to work with in the St. Louis area. Between the time that you co-wrote with Clara Moore, that book about chefs, right, and how they cooked, what kinds of changes have you seen in the St. Louis food scene that you really wanted to bring to the fore?
I think, you know, what really it amazes me is that, you know, 12 years ago, you know, it was a tough business and, you know, margins were thin and you know, places were opening and closing. And that's really still the case. But what's amazing to me is like there are still so many people who are willing to go out there and open a place. And that really has not changed, but that really surprises me. Because after a while, you're like, wow, this is really hard and the economy is really hard, and why do you keep doing this? And it just hopes in the restaurant industry, really hope springs eternal.
It's interesting to think about 10 years ago, because that was about the time I arrived in St. Louis from Los Angeles. And I do feel like I've seen so much development in that period. So this book seems pretty well timed.
Yeah, I think so. I kind of wanted to do a little bit of, like, you know, the new stuff, old favorites, just kind of run the gamut and not focus too much on one particular area.
Mm-hmm. Now, the introduction of your book, Matt, makes it really clear that what you are not doing is putting out a best of list. Why is that the case?
Well, I don't really believe in best of lists. Just who's, you know, like, whenever I see a best of list or a top 10 list, I'm always like, you know, says who? And also, it's just like there's so much out there. It's like what I really wanted to do is, instead of doing like the greatest hits album or, you know, this is Matt's absolute favorite 80 places, I really wanted to kind of, you know, give a broad overview highlight a lot of really cool areas and then give people like an entry point into those areas. So if they go to like, well, I'm going to go to this place on Cherokee Street and wow, that's fantastic. And wow, two doors down, there's another really cool place. And then just kind of start them exploring.
Mm-hmm. The book is not about just restaurants and bars. And that is in the subtitle mm-hmm. of the book, the shops and stores. Shops, I think we've gotten a little bit of a taste of why you were including them. Why did stores and purveyors also become part of the scope of this particular book?
Well, I just kind of wanted to give a really broad overview of the food scene. And a lot of times when we think of food scene, we think restaurants or bars. And really, it's much more than that. And we do have like some really great purveyors, you know, and some really great makers out there that I wanted to highlight that I think people know about, but maybe they don't get as much of attention as like the latest, greatest restaurant or bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then same with stores. We have some fantastic places where you can go and get some ingredients you're not going to find anywhere else. But sometimes they get kind of lost in the shuffle when everybody's like, hey, this new place is opening and or this new you know, bar is getting a lot of recognition.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into some of your picks because I'm sure people are waiting for that. You are not only a food writer, you are a bartender. So
yes.
Starting with bars seems the right place to begin.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ones you mention in the book is the Village Bar
yes.
in De Pere. Tell us about this old school watering hole.
Well, I have a very big personal connection with the Village Bar. So I grew up in Kirkwood, which is right next door to De Pere, for those of you who don't know. And so the Village Bar was kind of like my college neighborhood bar when I was in college. And so when I would come home from school, I had a job working paving parking lots for the school district that I went to and in Kirkwood. And so one of my supervisors moonlighted as a bartender over at Village Bar. And so we would go over there, get his employee discount and after work and just hang out. And that was kind of like my first really introduction to going to a neighborhood bar and experiencing, you know, that sort of vibe, you know, that sort of like, you know, hey, we're hanging out. It's just, you know, we're having a good time. It's convivial. And so, yeah. And it's a little different nowadays. They have expanded. There was a wig shop next door, of all things. A little while back, they expanded into that. And it's a little bit more family friendly, I guess, than it was before. Not that it wasn't, but it was like now they kind of cater a little bit more toward, you know, bigger groups. And, you know, you go in there and you see some, you know, soccer teams after practice, you know, with mom and dad. But yeah, it's just a really great place. Great burgers.
Well, something that you wrote about was onion rings.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was pregnant, that was the ring that I wanted put on me. And
yeah.
It's great to know that this is where I can find some hand cut.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're fantastic.
I also had no idea that it had that history. I've driven by there so many times.
Mm-hmm.
So if
yeah.
that was part of the reason you wrote this book, then you've succeeded in at least alerting me to
yeah.
to what's there.
Well, I think that's typical of a lot of places that are in the book. It's, you know, especially some of the older places that, you know, you've gone by them, you've heard the name, but never experienced them. And, you know, we do that every day. But there's, you know, just dig a little bit underneath the surface and there's a lot to be found.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of digging underneath the surface, you write about the Hideaway, which is not hidden necessarily. This is an establishment in South St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
and it's been around since the 1950s.
Yeah.
Tell us about this this bar, and in particular, their unusual bingo.
Yeah. So this is another place kind of like we were talking about. Like I drove by the Hideaway so many times. Going, you know, around town and always thought, man, I need to pop in there. Never did. And then finally I did a sauce story years ago on bars and I got to go in there and it was just this really fantastic. They got like shag carpeting on the front of the bar and they got like just like these kind of cheesy portraits up on the wall. It's a really great place. They also do, they have a piano player sometimes. They do karaoke. But they also, I think it's one Monday a month, they do meat bingo. So you go there and you play bingo and if you win, you get a cut of meat.
I mean,
like meat, yeah.
Yeah. Have you participated?
No, my wife has. So last year we had a big house renovation and we had to move out for a couple months. And so we stayed at this Airbnb property that was right across the street from the Hideaway. So we're like, well, now we got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so she started getting in the habit of inviting friends and going and playing meat bingo, which she still does.
Yeah. Well, that aspect of finding places mm-hmm. because of what your context is presenting to you. I think it's very well illustrated there. We'd like to invite you to join the conversation. If any of Matt Sorrell's picks are resonating with you, we'd like to hear why. Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also email us at talk@stlpr.org. Now, before we go to a break, tell us very quickly about Planter's House and how you first stepped foot in there.
Gotcha. Well, I helped open Planter's House in 2013. That's our 12th anniversary this month. And I had gotten to know Ted Kilgore, one of the owners, and we had worked together for here and there. And then when they decided to open his own place, he's like, hey, would you like to come on board? And kind of went from there. So, yeah, 12 years ago this month.
Mm-hmm. And was that one of your first bartending gigs or?
Yeah, I had been at a couple places before that that have since closed. But that was like my first really introduction to the craft cocktail scene, mm-hmm. probably, yeah.
And that is in South St. Louis, just north of Lafayette Park.
Yeah, it's in Lafayette Square. Soto and Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. How long ago was the last time you were in there?
It's been last holiday season because I went back and I helped out last year for a while. And then I also helped out during the holiday bars that they pop up this time of year.
Yep. So there's some relevance to what's happening now.
Oh, yeah.
The holiday season. We're going to take a very quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back. I'm Elaine Cha. Let's return to our conversation with Matt Sorrell. He is a food writer and bartender and the author of the new book, Matt's St. Louis Food Story. Before the break, Matt, we were talking about your being a bartender. We were talking about bars and great food. And great food with a great bar, this is something that is part of your daily experience or everyday experience as a bartender, right?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I'm lucky enough. I bartend at a place called Bistro La Florissant, which is in Clayton. If those of you who've been around a little bit will recognize it, it used to be Bar La Frere years ago. A very similar concept, French, little small French bistro. But yeah, fantastic food. I mean, just, yeah, our chef Nick is doing really good work there, mm-hmm. But we also have just a tiny little bar. It's like it's an interesting little, like, more of like a neighborhood vibe, like four seater. Come in, have a drink. Great wine program as well.
Mm-hmm. Purveyors are also part of this book, mm-hmm. and intoxicology is a place that you've mentioned for those who maybe want to have a bar experience, not out somewhere, but in their own homes, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about intoxicology.
So intoxicology is in the Grove neighborhood on Manchester. And Andy and Melissa are the owners. And a fun fact, Andy and I actually went to high school together at Kirkwood High. Didn't realize it until years later when he opened up intoxicology and I met him. And we're like, had that St. Louis conversation and it came up. But intoxicology is fantastic because they run the gamut. They have the high quality spirits. They've got all the best bar tools. They've got books. They've got glassware, new and vintage. And then they also do classes, like how tos, that, they pretty much sell out immediately because they're very well regarded. And they also do a lot of tastings where you can go in and sample different spirits before you buy, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Did you find that the pandemic affected kind of what you were seeing and aware of? Because you couldn't go out to eat at the places that you were used to?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it definitely, everything kind of shut down and it was more of a takeout experience, which was an interesting thing, I thought. And I was really impressed by a lot of the creativity out there, by how people were able to pivot and still do good stuff when it was mostly just, you know, here's your bag of food. Mm-hmm. I definitely saw that. And I think it made everybody kind of rethink how they did business. So when everything finally opened back up, maybe they were a little bit smarter about how they went about things.
Mm-hmm. We have Susan, who's in Bloomsdale, Missouri, calling with something to add to our conversation. Susan, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hi.
Sure, go ahead.
So I heard your discussion about your love for hand-cut onion rings.
Yes.
Someday, when you have a little bit of time, take a ride down 55 to St. Genevieve, Missouri. There's a little restaurant on the town square called the Anvil that is extremely old, like everything in St. Genevieve is, and it's pretty cool. But they have the best hand-cut onion rings in the world.
Oh, Susan, thank you so much.
That sounds like a road trip, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Susan's comment, and Susan, thank you for calling. Does it make you think about a discovery that you made through someone else's recommendation for a place that is right here in the St. Louis area where you grew up?
Oh, yeah. In fact, for the book specifically, I was wanting to maybe do a little bit more exploring and you know, get out of my little comfort zone. And so I had reached out to some chef friends, and one of them, Lauren Nalick, who is one of the owners of Balkan Treat Box, she gave me a couple of recommendations that actually ended up in the book. So one of them is Taste of Bosnia, which just is just a fantastic little place out in what's technically South County, I guess. And then also, and I'm going to mispronounce this, and I apologize ahead of time, a little bakery slash cafe called Zlatno Zito, which is in the Bevo area, a very small little kind of hole in the wall place. One half is a bakery. One half is like, you know, so like a small restaurant, and just fantastic bread. I had never heard of it, didn't know. And they've been there for a while. And yeah, that was just like a big surprise because I just, you know, like I said, I've probably been by there a million times and never even paid much attention to it.
One of the things that occurred to me as I was going through this book, Matt, is that, you know, the food scene has changed because of the people who are here. Mm-hmm. There are folks who have come as refugees. Mm-hmm. There are those who have migrated from other parts of the United States. And the two examples that you shared, as well as, I mean, if we include Lauren Knowledge, who's been on the show, Welcome Treat Box, that so much of the story of St. Louis does have to do with the people and the things that they've brought.
Absolutely.
But your own food story includes places that you have traveled to, right?
A few. Like I love Filipino food. And I was lucky enough, like years ago, I was in the Army and I got to spend a good part of my time there in Manila. And I got to taste a lot of things, not as much as I would have liked at the time. But then like later on, I, you know, ran into a lot of people like my friends, Brian and Joel, who used to own Gorilla Street Food, and really started getting into Filipino stuff through them. And we have a really vibrant Filipino culture, you know, diaspora, I guess you could say, here in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Cain Tayo is one of the places that is in your book. It is very close to where we're sitting right now in Midtown. Why did that restaurant, which also is a migration story in that they started in Illinois, right, and moved over here. Why did it make your list?
Well, first off, as soon as I heard there was another Filipino restaurant, I was like, oh, I gotta check it out because I just really have an affection for the food. And I really liked it because if you ever get a chance to go there, we're talking about community and whatnot, and it's just this vibrant neighborhood place. They had like this huge karaoke group thing happens, which I have not participated in, but like it's just whenever you go there, it's just like a neighborhood gathering spot, which I think the best places are. It's got that public house tradition. It's not a bar, but it's a public house. It's someplace where people can go, feel comfortable, to have really, really great food. And the owners, Randy and his wife, Sally, are just super nice people, too. Mm-hmm.
And it's got a very living room kind of vibe,
right? Oh, it does,
right?
Yeah.
So speaking of neighborhood vibes, let's return to bars. Mm-hmm. Iowa Buffet in South St. Louis is a bar. It's got that very classic, you know, old school neon Budweiser sign over the door. and you write about it. Unfortunately, you might run into some sock hat hipsters and selfie-taking scenesters when you visit. Mm. So, Matt, I had to resist the urge to put on a sock hat for the show because I have somewhere to be this evening. My hair has to look right. But what is it about sock hat hipsters and selfie-taking scenesters?
Well, in full disclosure, you know, I'm sitting here with like a big beard and a flat cap.
Right.
So and like horn rim glasses. So like I don't have a lot of room to talk about hipsters, really. But I think that like it's just one of those places where sometimes I think people go there because it's like, oh, it's vibey, it's this, it's that. Mm. And then so you get pictures like, ooh, I'm gonna take a selfie in front of the cool dive bar or whatever. Which I'm not a big, you know, I'm like whatever. But the true fans know it's a great place.
Mm-hmm. Something that I noticed coming up in your book a lot was the word unpretentious or no pretense. It's all over the place. Why is that so important?
Well,
to
I have
you?
To tell the editor about that because we probably should have like maybe left out if we had that many. But the reason it comes up is just because I look at restaurants and bars as an experience, not, you know, a Food Channel experience or a Travel Channel experience, but just a plate. You know, I very rarely remember all the dishes I eat somewhere or whatnot, but I always remember when I had a good time.
Right.
I always remember the places that I liked going and hanging out at. And for me, that has to be unpretentious. And it doesn't matter if it could be high-end food and more like, you know, like a fine dining type situation. It could be, you know, like a food truck. I mean, but it's that whole attitude of like, you know, we're not trying that hard to impress you.
Right.
We're just doing what we do.
Well, that feels like a very St. Louis sensibility. And it reminds me of, this thing that people will say about what they remember. Mm-hmm. It's not maybe what a person says or does, but how they make you feel.
Sure.
Yeah. One of the other places that is in your book is one that St. Louis Public Radio colleagues have been to quite a number of times. It was one of the first bars that I visited, and this Royale on Kings Highway next to Tower Grove Park. And you write that the Royale harkens back to, you'd mentioned earlier, a public house tradition. What does that mean, Matt? And how do people experience that at the Royale?
Well, kind of what we were just talking about, like it's very comfortable. You don't get the sense that like somebody designed it, or you don't get the, you know, like, oh, we went out and we decided we needed to buy these cool tchotchkes for the wall. It's just a very organic place. It's kind of grown up that way. And that space has been a bar for forever. And it was also one of the first really like cocktail centric bars in, well, I wouldn't say in St. Louis, but it opened about 20 years ago. Mm. At the time, you know, if you want to get a good Manhattan or an old fashioned or something like that, that was kind of before the whole craft cocktail thing happened. And they actually started taking it seriously. A few other places too. But I mean, it's a comfortable, cool place to go. They have a beautiful garden patio area. This town loves patios. One of the best patios around. And then the owner, Steve Smith, is just one of those guys. It's like he just makes everybody feel like a regular.
Mm. I want to go to another part of town, and this is Olivet. The Wine Merchant has been there since 2023, and this is another business that has moved from one place to the other.
Yeah.
What makes the Wine Merchant a place that deserves a spot in this particular book?
Well, I mean, just they have like one of the best selections of wines and spirits, so that right there is kind of, you know, a big plus. But also, again, like it's like a really cool place. You can go in. Jason, the owner, we have a couple of friends who work there, Claire Augustine, a little shout out to Claire. Just a great place. You can go in there and immediately people they're talking to you like, hey, what, you know, and they're not trying to sell you anything. They're not trying to push the latest flavored vodka or whatever. They're just like, hey, what do you like? And they have a really nice bar set up at the new place where you can go and taste things. And it's just like this all-encompassing, really nice experience.
Mm-hmm. Has there been a growth in that kind of approach over the years?
Anecdotally, I would say I think so. Yeah, I mean, I think people are much more they want that personal touch.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can go, when it comes to wine and spirits, you can buy booze anywhere. So, and you can buy it probably, you know, if you really want to do cheap, you can probably get it cheaper somewhere, but you can't get that sort of personal touch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people really appreciate that and gravitate toward it. Yeah.
Very quickly, mm-hmm. in about a minute or so, mm-hmm. what's the last place you went to that is in this book?
Well, Bistro La Florissant, because I worked last night.
Right, right.
So that would probably be the most recent one. After that, probably J International. I was over there not too long ago picking up some ingredients for some drinks I was working on. Those two probably, yeah.
And J International has a special place in your heart.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably the first international grocery store I went to in St. Louis, mm-hmm. Where I just walked in and was like, wow.
What did you go in there looking for?
Man, I don't remember exactly. Probably kimchi.
Oh.
I love kimchi.
Okay. Was it the cabbage kind?
Oh,
or?
Yeah. I prefer the traditional, like, rough-cut cabbage mm-hmm. version. I like them all, but yeah.
Yeah. And this is because of your travels again, right?
Yeah.
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 What was that you did in Korea?
Oh, well, in Korea and the Philippines, I was in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did some temporary duty at those places.
Mm-hmm.
And just got to hang out a little bit and experience, not as much as I'd like, but.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll pick up with this conversation with Matt Sorrell, who's the author of a new book about his food story in St. Louis. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Elaine Cha. Let's return to our conversation about the new book, Matt's St. Louis Food Story. And we're talking with its author, Matt Sorrell, a longtime St. Louis food writer. We also want you to join this conversation. If any of Matt's picks are resonating with you, we'd like to hear why. Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also email us at talk@stlpr.org. So Matt, before we move any further, mm-hmm. I have the great benefit and pleasure of getting to talk to you and see you in person. And you've got some upcoming author events in the next couple weeks, right?
Yeah, I sure mm-hmm. do. So Urban Chestnut, their Midtown location, the original location, they do a holiday market on Sundays during December. And so I'll be there this coming, which is the 7th, and then the following, and also the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm also going to be at the Royale. We did an event at the Royale in October. We're doing another one where I'll be signing books on the Thursday the 11th from 5:30 to 7:30.
What are some of the questions people have asked?
Well, everybody always wants to know my favorite of whatever mm-hmm. bar or restaurant, and I have none. Don't ask me because I can't.
Okay.
I won't drill down into that.
Don't put them on the spot, y'all.
Yeah, it changes every day. Really, I mean, honestly. But a lot of people want to know like how you start as a food writer, or how I started as a food writer, and then also you know how the book came about, because I think a lot of people would love to write a book,
mm-hmm.
but it's kind of like this amorphous thing where it's like, well, how does that actually happen? And so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The pick that stood out to me, because it represents St. Louis in a very crunchily delicious way. It's one of the purveyors, and it's Old Vienna.
Oh, yeah.
So the Red Hot Riblets. This is something that I send home because you can't have it in California. There's something very clearly written on the packaging. Why did you include this potato chip in your book, Matt?
I've always loved chips and barbecue type chips, so like spicy ones. And it's just the original. It's just the one I remember as a kid eating. And it is. It's like a very St. Louis thing. It's kind of like Vest Soda. It's Anheuser-Busch. It's just this brand. And it's a big famous brand, and it's all ours, and mm-hmm. which I really like. And it's just, I also love that they have like, you can actually get the Red Hot Riblet seasoning in like a shaker and put on your eggs or what? It's yeah, it's fantastic.
We talked with someone who's a TV producer, and she says in her home in Los Angeles, that is something that is always there. Is that shaker?
Oh, that's cool.
The places that people are going not only to enjoy the food that they can buy ready-made, but also the groceries. One of the ones that caught my attention was El Morelia.
Yeah.
Because I went to the new iteration of it, as well as the one that had been run before, the tortillas.
Oh, yeah.
Is this why you included this?
Actually, the reason I included it, it's like I never went to the original. I knew about it, but I had just not gone over there.
Oh.
And so then when I heard they were opening the new one, I'm like, oh, well, now I have to go. And first of all, it's just like, I don't know what it was before, but it was some sort of huge big box something or other, because it's just this huge, enormous, you know, space. And you go in there and it's just like this like riot of color and, you know, there's a tortilleria and there's like a huge butcher counter. There's like, you know, you can get tacos and, you know, you can the great produce and then probably the biggest selection of agave spirits in town, I would think, just like rows and rows of tequilas and mezcals and, you know, everything. But it's just, it's just one of those. And that's another really, it's a community spot too, where like, you know, a lot of the people from like, you know, different Latino communities can come there and find stuff they can't find other places.
Mm-hmm. You also have a couple of farms in this book. Tell us about Earth Dance.
Oh, well, Earth Dance, I just love those folks. So this is a urban farm up in the Ferguson area, and I've known about them for years. So Molly Rockman-Corey, who is the founder, I think that's still her official title, basically bought this parcel of what used to be a much larger farm and just started really getting into community farming. And they just do, you know, they have apprenticeship programs and like a farm stand and another really big community focused organization. But what I really like about it is the fact that like it's a farm. I mean, it's like a legitimate farm in the middle of Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
Not the first place you were going to think about, you know, for like, you know, people growing produce.
And how did you come to it?
I don't remember. It was towards the beginning of it. I'm probably sure I wrote something about it for Sauce or Feast. Then I started going over there on my own and doing things like helping out with events and that sort of thing, and just really falling in love with the organization. It's really great, a really real asset.
Mm-hmm. The other farm is a cheesy one.
And oh yeah,
it is in in Bloomsdale.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I gave Beji like a pass on the St. Louis specific thing because like I kind of wanted everything to be in St. Louis City or County. They're technically not, but they're really kind of ubiquitous. You know, their cheeses are everywhere in town, and they just do some fantastic stuff. You know, just goat cheese is their specialty, and just. It's fantastic. And the spaces, you know, now they have like a event space and they've got like, I think some like small cottages you can rent and actually see the farm and do the Airbnb thing. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. I want to end with some restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And Lona's Little Eats is one of them. I had the opportunity to meet her and talk with her a little bit at a dumpling dinner recently.
Oh, cool.
And man, she has got some character.
Oh, she's the nicest lady.
Mm-hmm.
Love her.
So Lona's Little Eats is going to be expanding, but it started very small, right?
Yeah.
And the first time you ate there, what do you recall of that? And why is it in this book?
One of the things that I love about that place is you go in there and it's just kinetic. There's stuff happening everywhere. And if you ever have met Lona before, she is everywhere. She's talking to somebody in the front of the house and then she's back there stirring a pot and then she's, you know, she's everywhere. And it has that really, again, I'm going to come back to the whole community feel, the familial feel. And it's just, and it's right there in this residential neighborhood and it just feels like somebody's house sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's very warm.
It is very warm.
Yeah. Crown Candy Kitchen is one that many people talk about. It's been around for a really long time. I think it is, it may be depicted in St. Louis Public Radio's, it's sort of puzzle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it's such an iconic place. And that is also one of the first places I went to when I moved to St. Louis. Was it the BLT that took you there? Was it the confections?
For me, it was the confections. I have a pretty big sweet tooth.
Oh,
so,
you do.
Yeah. So that's definitely it. And I give them so much credit because, you know, they have, you know, definitely weathered the storm. They have, you know, been doing the good work for years and years and years. And they've really been a cornerstone in their neighborhood, which I really appreciate because some of the areas in that general vicinity have been kind of, you know, ignored very often. You know, North City, North County do not get a lot of attention that they need. So I really give them a lot of credit for being an anchor there.
Mm-hmm. Meskerem is another one. I went looking for Ethiopian food because it's one of my favorites that I enjoyed back in Los Angeles. And it's a place that I try to go to by myself or with someone I know is going to love the injera because that is my jam.
Yeah.
So Meskerem and what it kind of represents about what's available when it comes very broadly to African food. Mm-hmm. What is special about Meskerem?
For me, it's, you know, like you said, like the injera, which if, for those who don't know, it's sort of like this tangy, spongy bread. And you will use it in lieu of utensils. You know, you scoop up your food with this. And so that, to me, like I was like fascinated by that. And I think I mentioned in the book too, it's like if you go in there, do the right thing and eat with the injera. Don't ask for a fork. Don't bring your own utensil. You know, just do the thing.
Have you seen people bring their
own?
Yes,
I have.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's horrifying. Yeah. So I'm like, have the experience. But the food is also really great and a lot of really great vegetarian options too for those who like, you know, non-meat
And that's
items.
In that South Grand area?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is just – it continues to be a real – you know, Mecca for a lot of international food.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the picks that offers food, but was one of the bars category, was the Scottish Arms.
Yeah.
And it closed last year. There is new ownership, and there's some plans to reopen. But in your section about the Scottish Arms, you write about having to say farewell to beloved places. Mm-hmm. Talk with us more about that.
Yeah, it was a sad night. I had really had an attachment to that. Ali Nisbet, who was the former owner, fantastic Scottish man, who is living in Colorado now, I believe. But he came in for the farewell, and I had bonded with him, and you know all these people so many friends of mine have worked there as bartenders, as servers, as on the line, and so I just had a really special place in my heart. So yeah, seeing like going there for like that final toast and having the pipers play us out, it was pretty sad. But I was really happy that they were able to find a way to come back.
Mm-hmm. Are there other places that you miss that are not part of this book?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple. Harley Hammerman does the Lost Tables. I think it's a blog, and it's also, is he doing a podcast, I believe, also?
Oh, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, but that's a great resource if anybody wants to find out, like, places that are no longer around. But, yeah, I would love to do, like, some places that aren't around anymore because, like, near where I work now, Zoe Robinson owns several restaurants in that area. Bar La Frere was one of them. She had a place called E. Fratellini, which was like one of my favorite Italian places in the world. And so I miss that a lot.
What are some of the opportunities that open up, though, when even beloved places close?
Yeah, I mean, it's always bittersweet. I always feel, you know, supportive when somebody says, okay, I've had enough and we're gonna close. You know, it's a hard business, and I totally, you know, support them in their decisions and wish them well, and I totally understand why they do it. But like I said, hope springs eternal in the restaurant world, and there's always somebody else willing to step in there, which is another thing that I really love about, you know, the resilience. And so it's sad to see places go, but it's always interesting to see what comes in.
Mm-hmm. So I opened today with a description of the cover, and I think we can have a bit of a conversation about this because this is work by Dan Zedwak. He's been a guest on the show. He was the artist behind our Welcome Kit project. What does this cover reflect about how you would like people to use this book.
The cover is very much, it's just a bunch of tiny me's running around eating things and drinking things.
And writing, too.
And writing. Yeah. I'm doing all sorts of stuff in there. Every time I look at it, I see I'm doing something else. For me, like, I want people to, like, it's fun. You know, it's bright. It's you know, a little cartoony. So I want people to have fun with it. I want people to actually, you know, go and explore and use this more as, like, just a jumping off point, because we're all very provincial, myself included. We have our little areas that we stick to and we don't go outside of them. We have so much here in town that I really just want this to be a way for people to kind of get out of their comfort zone and find something new.
Mm-hmm. This certainly seems like the right way to do that. Matt Sorrell is a food writer and bartender and the author of the new book, Matt's St. Louis Food Story. Matt, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Today's episode was produced by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.